Okay, so now, after Steve's presentation, I will get into the most practical details regarding the consequences of the Fukushima Daiichi accident. So as a recap again, what were the human consequences? So we had almost 22,000 evacuees, which were huge. So people who needed to be compensated because they lost houses, they lost jobs, they didn't have anything left, so they needed to get some money to survive. Now, after there, you had also the economical loss. So here you have some numbers to give you an idea of the importance of it. It seems that the area was not part of the most economical developed part of Japan, which is in a certain way better for the national economy. So as Steve said, the operator is going to be liable to compensate all nuclear damage that was caused as a result of the accident. So in fact, the legal system that was set up in Japan, as in any other country with such a similar legislation, is in fact in place in order to help victims to get compensated as quickly and as smoothly as possible. So the most important principles that you have to have in mind is that the only person who is liable is the operator. So in fact, the principles of strict liability and exclusive liability are extremely important, because that means that the victims don't lose time trying to see to whom they have to go and claim something. They just go straight to the operator. You don't have to spend years in court trying to find out who is, in fact, in fault here. And so this should help. So who is also the person who is entitled to do such claim? So it can be the person, when you say a person, it can be either an individual or a business, because as we saw, I mean, there were huge business losses also due to that, because the evacuation meant companies need to close down their offices. No more economical activity. So we talk about individuals, but also companies. The only thing that is required from the victims in order to be compensated is that they have to prove that there is a causal link between the damage they suffered and the accident. Well, that is something that we're going to see that is not always very easy to prove, especially here in Japan, where you had an earthquake, a tsunami, and the accident. So some of the damages, it was difficult to distinguish whether they were due because of the earthquake or because of the accident. So then, well, about causality, that's something we're going to see so a little bit later on. So which damage can be compensated? Because, I mean, you're not just going to say that because you had to evacuate, or maybe you lost the opportunity to do something in the future, you can be compensated for that. You have to define which damage is going to entitle you to be compensated. So usually the nature, the form, the extent, and the equitable distribution of compensation are dealt with in national laws. So As you saw before, there is not a clear definition of damage. I mean, you don't have nuclear damage is, you know, 2 points and then a list. You don't have that. So legally speaking, it's the civil courts who are going to define on a case-by-case basis whether a damage can be considered as a nuclear damage and therefore entitle you to compensation or not. But before going to courts, because, I mean, that means that, you know, you have to go through a procedure and all that, you have the Dispute Reconciliation Committee for Nuclear Damage Compensation. In short, the Reconciliation Committee that has been set up. It is something that is already provided in the Japanese law. It has been set up before in 1999 when you had the Takaimura accident. It had already worked. Already at that time, but well, of course, the consequences of such accidents were much smaller than what we're talking about here for Fukushima. So they had to put it in place again. I understand that, in fact, the Reconciliation Committee that was set up for the Takaimura accident had been, in fact, dissolved just a few years ago. So they had, again, to set up a new one. In this reconciliation committee, you will find law professors and some economics professor who are going to attend it. So the one for the Fukushima accident was set up in April, so very quickly after the accident. And it is under the Ministry of Education, Culture, Sports, Science, and Technology, MEXT. So what does it do? So it has two major roles. One is to issue guidelines to determine the heads of damage to be compensated. In fact, they're the ones who are going to give you the list of the damages that can be compensated and how, and who can be entitled for the compensation. So these guidelines are not legally binding because legally speaking, the only person who is entitled, in fact, to determine the compensation are the courts. However, even though they're not legally binding, in Japan, they look like almost compulsory. I mean, everybody follows the guidelines that have been issued by this reconciliation committee. And the other role it has, that Steve just mentioned, is when there are disputes regarding the compensation that has been set up, has been paid by TEPCO, the victims can submit a claim to this reconciliation committee. So it also has a role of mediator in these kind of things. So here is, in fact, the table of the guidelines that have been issued by this committee. As you can see, they have worked very hard. They have issued four important guidelines with supplements and outlines, which gives very detailed information of the damages that have to be compensated. See, the last one was only issued in March, so they're still working on it. So the thing also is that each time a guideline comes out, you've got additional damages that are due to be compensated. So in fact, TEPCO's liability has been increasing month by month. So it is, of course, for the benefit of the victims because the Japanese government is concentrating all its efforts to try to help them as much as possible. But as we're saying, I mean, also you have to take into account the company itself, the operator. And as guess, as you must have seen in the newspaper, TEPCO has been suffering quite a lot of economic loss because it has to pay not only for the compensations of the victims, but also the damages to the sites, the decontamination costs, and also it has still to generate electricity for the Tokyo region and else. So this has only been burdening more and more TEPCO's account. So what has been the basic approach of the reconciliation committee? Well, they have based themselves on the precedent of the Takaimura accident. Even though it was not to some extent, that gave them already something to work on. Regarding causality, because as we're saying, I mean, also it is difficult to see whether a damage is really linked to the accident. They consider that as long as a causal link between the nuclear accident itself and the damage suffered is logically and reasonably established based upon social convention, that damage will entitle you to be compensated. And well, of course, as I was saying just before, there is also the problem of distinguishing which damages are due, in fact, to the earthquake and tsunami, and which ones are, in fact, due to the accident. So what they try to do is to assess in other parts of Japan that suffered the earthquake, but not the accident, what damages you had there, so that you can consider that those ones are really the ones linked with the earthquake and not really with the accident. So here's a map that you have seen already several times about the areas that have been set up. This is the map that was drawn up just after the accident, where you have the restricted area, the 20-kilometer area, and you have the deliberate evacuation area and the evacuation prepared area in case of emergency. So now we're going to get into more detail and practical overview on what were the damages that were considered by the reconciliation committee. So of course, one of the major impacts of the accident was the evacuation. Almost 72,000 people were evacuated. So first thing that comes to mind is you have to compensate all those evacuees. So what did you pay? What did TEPCO compensate for? So you had the examination expenses, so everything related, you know, to the examination of radiological impact on the persons and also on the products. And then as very common evacuation expenses like travel expenses, removal belongings, households. One thing also that you have to have in mind, which was extremely difficult to assess, is the amount. Because people left their homes with nothing. They were trying to survive as they could, so, I mean, you cannot, when somebody's coming and ask you for compensation, you're not going to ask them, do you have the invoice? Because, I mean, it's a little bit complicated. So that also has to be taken into account. Well, there is injury or death, and there is the mental anguish. So at the beginning, what was taken into account was the mental anguish of the evacuation. But when, in fact, the evacuation lasted more than expected, and people just lived for months away from their home, then there was also taken into account the mental anguish of living as an evacuee. That was taken into account. You had the business damages, the damages arising from incapacity to work for an employer. That is something is really for the employees. A self-employed person would not be entitled, in fact, for this. The examination expenses concerning property and products, the loss or decrease of movable and immovable property value, especially the households. When your house was in the 20-kilometer zone, I think that must have lost all its value for the next years. So you had to take that into account. Loss or decrease of, you had also the temporary access expenses for those persons who were entitled at a certain time to go back home to take some things with them. You know, you have, must have seen those images of evacuees coming, going back to grab something. So there were those expenses also that had to be compensated by TEPCO. And finally, the homecoming expenses for those who could fortunately go back to their houses. So in order to calculate the damages, so how do you do that? Depending on the damages that we just saw, the committee will take into account the person itself. So they had three counts of evacuees. You had those who had to leave, those who were already outside of the zone who couldn't go back, and then those who were forced to take shelter. Well, as I was saying, you have the difficulties of proving. You know, you don't have any invoice or nothing. You know, when you said that you lost your house, I mean, you're not going to show them the house. You cannot get into the zone. Also, you had the period that was has to be taken into account. Usually, the damages are compensated per person and per month. And some of them are compensated for period one, for period two. So those, this period, in fact, were set up quite recently by the guidelines. Period three is going to be the final one, which is the one, in fact, that is going to cover from March 2012 until, hopefully, when the person will be able to go back to his home. So this is now the new evacuation area that will give first damages, that you take into account for the calculation of damages. You still have the restricted area that hasn't moved, the deliberate evacuation area either. But now you have three different areas that has been distinguished, and maybe you already have heard of. So you have the area one, which in a near future should be, person should be authorized to go to. So that soon you have the period three that applies to that will come to an end. You have area two, which is still subject to living restrictions, and area three, which is similar, in fact, to what can be called a restricted area. I mean, it's something people will not be able to go back to, at least in the next 5 years. Then after the evacuation, all the damages relating to evacuation, you had another kind of evacuation. It's the voluntary evacuation. So what's that? In fact, there were people who were living in the areas who were near to those where people had to evacuate, or some evacuees who were staying there. And because they didn't have enough information of what was going on and whether those areas, which was quite near to the other ones, might also be dangerous, I mean, they were afraid, they went further, even though there was no governmental orders to evacuate. But they just were afraid. I mean, you can imagine, even if you have children, I mean, you just want to go as far as possible. So those is what is called a voluntary evacuation. And there are specific compensations also with regard for children under take carers and pregnant women in these areas also. So what are the types of damages that are compensated by TEPCO? So those, the increased cost of living expenses, the mental anguish again, and the removal expenses when you have to take off your things, take them with you. So there were areas, because the problem also is that you cannot, I mean, compensate all the damages, because you have in front of you TEPCO, which is a company. It has a registered capital. I mean, it has also its economical limits. So there was an area that was, in fact, defined where this voluntary evacuation will be applicable. And so there I gave some examples of compensations, for example, that were provided to the victims. Then you had damages related to the navigation danger zones. The 20 kilometers restricted area went also into the sea. So you had fishing operators who couldn't work, or persons engaged in coastal shipping or coastal passengers transport operations. So they also were entitled to be compensated. You had shipping restriction orders, because of course, I mean, commodities that would come from certain areas that suffer radiation from the accident, I mean, it was an important business loss for the producers and distributors. So there you have a list of what was compensated. Then you had the planting restriction orders. This is most applicable to farmers. They also had to be compensated. And there's this very interesting damage. This is the rumor-related damage. Also, it's very delicate to define. I mean, how can you define the damage? It's just by pure rumor. But it's true that in a time of crisis, like for the Fukushima accident, rumors spread very quickly and have an extremely negative impact on some businesses. So even though you don't have a clear definition of rumor-related damages, so how did the committee define this, try to define this rumor-related damage? So they considered when the consumer or the trading partner, in fact, doesn't buy your things or stop trading with you because they are concerned about the contamination of your products, and that because the information that has been provided to them and because of the circumstances, such, in fact, attitudes can be considered as reasonable from an average and ordinary person perspective. It's true that if somebody tells you that, you know, I've heard that you shouldn't eat fish that comes from I don't know where because it's contaminated, the first thing you're going to do is stop buying it, even though you don't have a clue if it's true or not, but I mean, you're not going to take your chances with it. So the causal link here is very difficult to establish. So it's going to have to be considered on a case-by-case basis. So of course, as you can imagine, the concerned sectors are agriculture, forestry, and fisheries. And tourism was a huge one also. You had a lot of articles about tourist company who were complaining that people didn't come anymore to see their landscapes, which were so beautiful, and not at all contaminated, but just people didn't come. And it's true that, I mean, people stopped going to Japan for a very long time. So the problem also is all Japan, in fact, impacted by these rumor-related damages? Because in a certain sense, you can say, well, it's true. Some people might consider twice, three times before going to Japan for holidays, and not just after the accident. Well, no, in fact, there were only some regions. I mean, they defined the parts, the regions in Japan who could be entitled to this rumor-related damages compensation. Not the whole of Japan was concerned by this. Here you have a table, which I will not ask you to read right now, but if it gives a good outline of all the damages that have been compensated until now by TEPCO. It distinguishes those who, in fact, are due to governmental instructions, yes, who is on your left side, and the other ones, like the rumor-related damages. And something also that you have to take into account is that the TEPCO had to pay, of course, for the damages to the victims, but it also has to pay for the decontamination. Because according to law, and this law was just passed last year, the government is going to, in fact, to work on the decontamination issue. But in fine, it's TEPCO is going to bear the costs of the measures that are going to be taken pursuant to the act. And as you can see, the cost is not little, as you can imagine. And so this only adds to all the other amounts that TEPCO will need to pay to the victims. So this is the end of part two regarding the damages definition.